ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Chapter 6, text number 45. Prayatnad yamata yatamanastu yogisham shuddha kilbishaha aneka janma sangsiddhas tatoyati param gatim. Translation, and when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then, ultimately, achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A person born in a particularly righteous, aristocratic, or sacred family becomes conscious of his favorable condition for executing yoga practice. With determination, therefore, he begins his unfinished work, and thus he completely cleanses himself of all material contaminations. When he is finally free from all contaminations, he attains the supreme perfection, Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the perfect stage of being freed from all contaminations. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, text 28. Yesham tantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam vridhavata. After many, many births of executing pious activities, when one is completely freed from all contaminations and from all illusory dualities, one becomes engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This verse is both a continuation of the ongoing dialogue with Arjuna about the unsuccessful yogi and what happens to the unsuccessful yogi. And it's also a lead-in to the concluding two verses of the chapter. The previous, just immediate previous verse is the comparison between yoga practice and the ritualistic portion of the Vedas. Because the persons that are engaged in the ritualistic portion of the Vedas attain a situation at best. They attain a higher but another temporary situation, elevation to the higher planetary regions by punya karma. And the yogi, in contrast, is seeking that which is permanent. So they, going back, Arjuna asks the question, it's a good question, what if someone decides, okay, I'm going to go for it, the permanent. So they let go of the impermanent, but they don't make it. Aren't they in a very awkward situation? They're neither here nor there. Isn't there a situation like a riven cloud that has no existence in any sphere? And Krishna's answer, of course, is no, that's not the case. Because when you invest in that which is eternal, it's the best investment. It's eternal. It doesn't perish with time. Even if one stops, desists due to worldly mindedness, or just doesn't complete, then there's some different destinations that are described. And there's basically three options. For one who doesn't complete, they can go to the heavenly planets, enjoy for long duration, as is the duration of life in the heavenly planets, and then come again to this earthly planet and continue where they left off. Or, second option, they can take birth in an aristocratic family. So they don't have aristocratic meaning. They have means to maintain themselves, so they don't have to worry hand to mouth. They have the leisure or the facility to dedicate their time. They have discretionary time to engage in continuing their spiritual activity where they left off. Or righteous Brahmana family. Of course, one could also just take birth in a devotee family and directly engage in devotional service. So these are options for the unsuccessful yogi. And then, having explained what particular birth one might take, Krishna explains that one has a natural attraction for yoga principles without even looking for them. Does anybody have that experience from their childhood? Lots. This may surprise you. I'll share this with you. Because I wasn't born in India, if you've noticed. So I can remember very clearly in the living room of the house where I was growing up as a small boy, two of my sisters and myself doing yoga asanas. We never went to yoga class, but we were doing different yoga asanas, very difficult ones. You know, like both feet behind your head. And, you know, I don't know where that came from. At least I didn't know them where it came from. But Bhagavad Gita tells where it came from. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yoga principles, even without seeking them. And I'll share something else with you. I didn't hear the syllables Krishna until I was in college. So, you know, maybe 20 years old, 21 years old. And the first Krishna syllable I heard was from a Broadway musical in the late 60s. It was called Hair, H-A-I-R, meaning hair. Because it was a Broadway musical about the hippie counterculture of America. That, you know, big hair was the sign of being a hippie. So part of the Broadway musical was the Broadway people, it wasn't devotees, but they got on stage and they chanted Hare Krishna. Because it was part of the counterculture of that era. So I didn't know what it was, but I was attracted. So we had a music room in the Norton Union, so I went to the fourth floor in the music room and checked out the album and would just sit and listen to that song over and over and over again. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know what it was. I never met a devotee. I didn't know what it was. But I was attracted. Where'd that come from? Same place where the yoga asanas came from. Something from a previous life. And Prabhupada, it's right in Nectar Devotion. When someone is naturally attracted to devotional principles and very quickly makes progress on the spiritual path, and I don't know if you've noticed, but over a period of time I've noticed, devotees kind of go, whoop, and then, isn't it? They just resume where they left off in their previous life, and then they hit this kind of plateau, and then that's about it for a while. And then they have to make, you know, have to do some more surrender. Oh. But it's what Prabhupada calls a permanent bank account. You've heard this one. You invest whatever it is in your bank account. You deposit 10%, and so in your next life it's at 11%. You just pick up where you left off. Permanent. There's no such bank account that's like that, that's material. When you're gone, you're gone. It's back to zero. So that's the previous verse. Now, today's verse is what happens next. So they're attracted to yoga principles without even seeking them. So that is, when they do come along, Krishna sends, because the guarantee is in your next life you get an opportunity to continue. There's two things that are guaranteed. You won't take an animal birth. You won't go down into the lower, just even Smaltam apyasya dharma shatrayate mahato bayat. You know that verse from Bhagavad Gita. Even smaltam, even a little, alpa, sva alpa, even a little devotional service, a little. That's sufficient to guarantee that one will not go glide down into the animal kingdom in your next life. Or if you can engage somebody, even a little, devotional service. It's very powerful. What to speak of a lifetime of cultivating devotional service. Very powerful. So one won't have to go down to the human, to the animal species. One will get a human birth. And in the next life, you get an opportunity to continue where you left off. And if you practice for some time, there was a devotee that joined the Brooklyn Temple, and he got initiated. His name was Padaseva Das. And when he read this verse, he was rubbing his hands together saying, "Oh, great. I just do a little devotional service in the course of this life, enough. Then I can, you know, leave devotional service. And I'll go to the heavenly planets and I'll enjoy prolonged duration of life." And, you know, we thought he was joking, but he wasn't. That, you know, he had a lot of faith in Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. And he left the movement, and then, you know, every now and then he'd come around and he was saying, "I can't wait." You know, he had great faith. Heavenly planets, kijai. And then I can come back and but it's true, that's what happens, but if one is more fortunate, one will, when one gets again the opportunity of practice of the yoga principles, this verse is saying, prayanad, prayatnad, yatamanas to. By rigid practice for a sustained period of time, many lifetimes, this is the Ashtanga Yoga system, many lifetimes, one will become gradually cleansed of kilbisha, the contaminations, the contamination of material contact. Because coming in contact with matter is contaminating. Now, in one sense, the soul is pure. So it's not exactly the soul becomes contaminated, but consciousness becomes contaminated through the agency of our dear friend, false ego. Oh, and our next best friend, the mind. Consciousness becomes contaminated. And once contaminated, it's very, very, very difficult to remove that contamination. So even something is very powerful, it may take many lifetimes of rigid practice of the yoga principles, and that contamination may become cleansed. And ultimately, after aneka janma samsiddhas, aneka, a large number. Eka is one, and aneka is not just one. Many, many. Many, many births, and practicing the yoga principles. One may, of course one may not, but one may come to the position of taking full shelter of Krishna. So, naturally one thinks of that bahu janma, many, many births of bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mam prapadyate, by the process of gyan, after many, many births of practicing very carefully the disciplines of gyan yoga, one may come to the position of surrendering to Krishna. And that's if one has this understanding that Krishna is everything. Of course, one might not also. One might come to some other conclusions after many, many births. One may come to that position. Or Prabhupada is quoting the verse from the 7th chapter, next chapter. After many, many births of executing pious activities, punya karma, Isham Twantikatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam. If one becomes freed from contaminations, Yesham Tu Antakatam Papam. If you just consistently engage in pious activities and do not engage in any sinful activity, but engage in the atonement for sinful activities, if by following the proper process of karma, then one can come to that position. Te dvandva moha nir mukta, the duality of delusion. Moha means deluded. And dvandva is duality, the delusion of duality. Instead of accepting who one is caught in this material world where there's duality. There's attraction and repulsion. There's happy and there's sad. There's pleasure and there's pain. There's black and there's white. There's up and there's down, and there's hot and there's cold, and wherever there is, there's its opposite. There's the realm of duality. And we're tossed around. The wave is rising, the wave is falling. We're like a little cork, a little piece of wood, just bobbing and sinking in the waves and the whirlpools of the material energy. You get seasick. It's not our natural position. But one can pass over that duality of delusion. One may do that after many, many births, becoming freed from contamination. and bhajante mam dridhavrata, take up the process of devotional service with great determination. So by the process of knowledge, by the process of fruitive activities, and by the process of yoga, one may, and also one may not, come to the position of simply surrendering to Krishna. So there are these indirect methods. And the Vedic literatures, let's be clear, the Vedic literatures supply them. Just like in a tall building, by convenience, there's an elevator. By law, you have to have a staircase. Because in case of a fire, you have to have a second means of getting out. Supposing the elevator shaft is on fire, you have to have it by law. Anywhere in the world. So Vedic process also has an elevator method and a staircase method, the gradual step by step. And one can choose the staircase. And one can choose the elevator. And Krishna is recommending the elevator method. Because one can go the staircase method and still not reach the top, desist. And it's many, 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 too many births and deaths, and too many accidents that can happen before getting there. So the elevator method is recommended. And that's what's coming. Krishna, then the next verse is Krishna saying that there's these different processes, but of all of them, the best of them is the process of yoga. So by all means, Arjuna, become a yogi. And then he identifies the best of all yoga systems. Bhakti. Or Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam. So what is it that we want to attain? We want to attain the goal. Param Gatim, the supreme goal. Krishna, shelter of Krishna. To reach that shelter of Krishna, there has to be purification. Or as Prabhupada would say, to enter into fire, you have to become fire. To enter into the presence of the Supreme Pure, you have to become pure. But the process of yoga is connecting one to the Supreme Pure. That's yoga, linking with the Supreme, who is supremely pure. So there's a sadhana, or a consistent practice to become pure. So we should bear in mind when we're doing our sadhana, that's a mode of goodness perspective of what the purpose of sadhana is. The purpose of sadhana is purification. When Lord Kapiladev is asked a question by Devahuti, she asks, devotional service is pure because devotional service is not different than Krishna, and Krishna is pure. But is it possible for devotional service to be mixed with the modes of nature? And his answer is yes. Devotional service is pure. It's like, you know, air having aroma. Air is colorless, odorless, tasteless. But air can also carry aroma. So in contact with the modes of nature, that which is pure can take on some contamination or a mix. Devotional service can be mixed. And one can describe Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, and Shuddha Bhakti. But we can also identify devotional service that's mixed with the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, and the mode of goodness. And then there's Shuddha Sattva. And Rupa Goswami just goes right to Shuddha Sattva and teaches us that's what devotional service is. It's without mix. So our sadhana is to help us to come to the position of unmixed devotional service. Like I'll give a a practical example of this. Somebody recently asked me, when we have a family member, or someone dear to us, a relative, or something like that, is it okay to pray to Krishna for their health or well-being or something like that? It's material, but they're dear to me, and so is it okay? And the answer is certainly it's okay. You approach Krishna for... He's the source of everything. But there's a better than okay position to take, and that is to pray for the spiritual well-being of such person. Because where there's spiritual well-being, material well-being will follow. And the material well-being may not be that, oh, they got the toothache and the toothache stops or something. Or they have a cancer and the cancer goes away. It's not that the problem goes away, but the soul will go to Krishna. That's the permanent solution to the problem. And as long as there's another body, there's going to be more problems. So the best is, better than okay, is to pray for the spiritual well-being. And even better than that is to do things for the spiritual well-being, along with your prayer of that family member, loved one, or something. In a way that they can receive it, create a circumstance where their spiritual well-being can be enhanced. And that's the best. Better than okay. So the yoga principles are intermediate for purification. That's the mode of goodness. Yeah, I was saying the mode of the quality of ignorance, devotional service and ignorance, is where I engage in devotional service because I want to get strength in order to defeat my enemy. Devotional service and ignorance. Devotional service and passion. He specifically speaks of deity worship, but it's any form of devotional service where I want to engage in devotional service because then I'll get some recognition, some honor and distinction, or some remuneration. Fruitive devotional service. Devotional service in the quality of goodness is where I engage in devotional service because I know it will purify my existence. I'm very clear that my existence isn't pure, and I know that devotional service will purify my existence. So I engage in devotional service for purification. Or that it's to be done. It's duty. It's quality of goodness. Like, you know, be truthful. Why should you be truthful? Because you're supposed to be truthful. It's a virtue to live by. Therefore, be truthful. Enough. I don't need any more reason than that. That's enough for me. Be truthful. Don't steal. Because you're not supposed to steal. It doesn't belong to you. You don't steal. Not just there's consequences if you steal. It's just you don't do something like that. It's just not to be done. So you don't do it. That's the mode of goodness. Because it's duty. Or... again, it will purify my existence. So that's what this verse is speaking about. Yogi sam shuddha kilbisha. Sam shuddha kilbisha. Shuddha is pure. Sam shuddha, completely pure. Of kilbisha, all contaminations. And it may take many births, aneka janma. But one can come to the position of perfection through the yoga practice. Now we'll go fast forward to the 12th chapter. And Krishna is being asked by Arjuna of the different objects of worship or meditation in the yoga process, which is the best object? Because when you're engaging in yoga, you're linking with the Supreme. So which conception of the Supreme should I focus upon, the personal or the impersonal? Because a yogi can also try to fix his mind upon Super Soul with the idea that that's me. I realize that I'm God by my yoga practice. Etc. So one may come to the position of tato yati param gatim, or as the verse that's being quoted in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, bhajante mam dridhavrata. That's the ultimate position. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita, to engage in Krishna's loving service with great determination. Great determination means there isn't something that's distracting me, because there's only one thing. Whatever other desirable things one might think of that exist, those other desirable things are achieved by achieving this one thing. Right? This is called faith. This is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's definition of faith. And it fits in worldly circumstances too. Faith means to have confidence that if I do this one thing, other desirable things will be achieved. So the materialist is money. Money, 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 money. Get money. Because if I get money, then I can get the things I want. So get money. By hook or by crook, get money. It's nice to do it nicely, but you can't get it nicely. Get it some means. Get money. Because then you can get what you want. Or let's say, you know, an Olympic athlete, whatever their particular sport is, they want the gold medal. And they sacrifice so many other things to do that one thing, because if they can get that one thing, then that's their happiness in life, is getting that gold medal. So everything gets channeled behind their eating, their social life, their time, waking and sleeping. It's one thing. Otherwise, they can't be an Olympic athlete. They're just something else. Or any other thing that you know. So that dridhavrata is when to make the object the service to Krishna, that takes lots of purification. And the means to get that purification is through the yoga practice, not just tapa or jnana or dhyana, giving in charity, or engaging in austerity. But it's the yoga principles. And then Krishna is going to go to the best of all yoga principles. Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. That's the best means of purification. It's very scientific, very logical, and you can, scientific in the sense that you can just, you know, you don't have to believe it. Just do the experiment. I'll share this with you. There was a devotee at the University of Florida. Dira Govinda is his name. And he was in, his field was social something, social sciences, social welfare, something like that. So for his PhD, he got approval of the statistics department and his own department, whichever that was. And it was his experiment was about the chanting of the effects of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So his premise for his PhD thesis was that the effects of the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra on depression, stress, and the modes of nature. So here's how he did the PhD program. He put an ad in the local school paper. So, you know, it's anybody, not just the faithful, anybody out there in, you know, the 50,000 student population. Here's an ad in the paper that says, for $35, we'll pay you if you do this little experiment connected with our department. And what you have to do for the experiment is you have to chant this mantra for 20 minutes every morning and every evening for 3 months. And here's $35. So then, and when they're interviewing the candidates, that there was two criterion that they were looking for. They'd actually do it, and that they would report honestly, whatever their experience was. So they selected their candidates, however many, and they divided them into three groups. One was the Hare Krishna group. The other was another Vedic mantra, and the other was a placebo group. It means they just made up some gobbledygook syllables and called it a mantra. And they told each of the three groups the same thing. And here's what they said. This is a very ancient mantra. And it's a fact, for one who chants this mantra, it will decrease tendency of depression, it will increase the quality of your life into the quality of goodness, and will diminish your stress. That's what it's for. So 20 minutes every morning, 20 minutes every evening. And then they had three different groups of people to report to. They had their self-reporting. They reported to the supervisor and his staff, so kind of like a neutral observing group, and then the PhD candidate. So they wrote their own, he did a personal interview, and they did their interviews. So at the end of the PhD program, and it was, you know, the data going to the statistics department to make sure it was analyzed properly and no fudging, no cheating, no, you know, funny stuff. At the end, that those who were chanting the Hare Krishna mantra reported least stress, greater diminishing of stress, greater diminishing of the tendency towards depression, and greater increase in the quality of goodness in their life. And at the end of his, you know, the write-up of his thesis, he said there's several other experiments that could be done that could continue and, you know, explore this subject further. And it was published in journals, whatever you call those kind of journals where you publish PhD papers. It was considered, you know, very well done, very, you know, informative. So, approach. So there's effectiveness in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, even if people don't know what it is. And they may think it's what they said it was at the University of Florida. But they may have thought the other thing is the same thing. So there's potency in the process that we have. And we have all kinds of support systems and personalities and opportunities to progress in this very wonderful process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and engaging in the yoga principles of bhakti, which is the best of all yoga practice. But in this chapter 6, we're getting like an overview of how it works and what's the goal of it. Purification. All the attachments that one may have to all the things that are temporary, that are connected, that we're attached to and connected to us, that gradually those things, we don't have to throw them away, but what we have to do is become detached from the false sense of proprietorship of those things. I'll say the same thing a little differently, and I'll end. I don't know how common it is here in India, but it's quite common in America that there are student groups that will from time to time come to the temple. Do you have that here too? No. So they have like a world religion class or a something, something, something class. And the teacher wants to have the students not just read it from a textbook, but come and experience. So they bring their, sometimes it's high school, more commonly it's college, groups of college students come to our temples in America. So there's these, you know, 30 up to 50 and sometimes 100 students that come. It's their first time experience. So they commonly like to come, the teacher knows, because he wants them to see the rituals of the Hare Krishna movement. So they come at Guru Puja time, deity greeting, Guru Puja, kirtan, and then class. And then they, you know, give them some snacks on their way out the door and some books and off they go. So at one of the questions, there's several common questions. You know, what's the stuff on your forehead? Why do you shave your head? What's the meaning of this color? Very high level questions. But another one of their questions is, in order to be a member of this religion, do you have to give up your worldly possessions? That terminology, give up your worldly possessions, is a Christian terminology because, like, this is a little education, there's the Catholic Church, but the real strict form of Catholic Church is the Jesuits. And the Jesuits are monks. They renounce all worldly possessions. They live a monastic life. So they look at us and say, wow, you guys are real serious. So do you have to renounce all your worldly possessions in order to become part of this religion? And the answer that I give is, no, you don't have to renounce all your worldly possessions, but you do have to renounce the misconceptions that you have worldly possessions to renounce. Then I explain. What that means is that actually everything belongs to God. And the misconception is this piece of everything belongs to me. And he's thinking this piece belongs to me, and everyone's got their misconception collectively thinking something belongs to me. So you don't have to give up those things. But you have to give up the misconception that they're your things. They're Krishna's things, and you're using them in service to Krishna. That's the renunciation. The renunciation of misconceptions. And that's what this verse is speaking about. Samshudhim sarvakilbishai. One has to, through the yoga process, become free from this misconception. But then what has to replace the misconception is the spiritual conception. Everything belongs to Krishna. If you don't have a clear conception of Krishna, that's not going to happen very quickly. Therefore, the spiritual conception of who is Krishna? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And why? Then what are the characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in contrast with any other controlling devata in the pantheon of the controllers of the universe, who one may also respect but not understand as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? There's only one source of everything. There's not more than one source of everything. And that which is the source of everything is the absolute truth. And there's not multiple absolute truths. There's one source of everything. That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, the very terminology, Godhead, implies fountainhead or source of everything. So that's Krishna. That's who Krishna is. And when he engages in pastimes like lifting Govardhan Hill, he's exhibiting his opulence of all strength. Who can do that? Nobody can do that. Not an ordinary somebody can do that. But this, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can create unlimited universes. What's the big deal of lifting a hill? if one can accept that he can create unlimited universes, sustain them, and then withdraw them just by inhaling. Try it. No good. Didn't work. Try again. I'm going to practice. No amount of practice is it going to happen. We're not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Neither exhaling, nor inhaling, nor maintaining. It's not our position. Or nor collectively. Let's have a big inhale. No good. This doesn't work that way. But that same Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear within the universe that he creates, perform wonderful pastimes to attract the hearts and minds of the conditioned souls that were within the universe and bring them to him in the spiritual world and give teachings how to do so when he comes. That's what Bhagavad Gita is. And that's what he's doing in this sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so any comments or questions?
Maharaj, as you were explaining how that sometimes I also observed some devotees, including my own case, all of a sudden that attraction for hearing and chanting comes. But till that time, like sometimes like 20 years or 30 years later, this attraction is seen. But till that time, it is observed that they are completely lost in some other activities and things. Why this phenomenon for an unsuccessful yogi, after some time this attraction is seen? Till that time, they are externally lost in materialistic affairs, and very rarely, like here and there, some attraction is there, but that prominent, intense faith and at once starting off and going forward happens after some point of their life.
I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you saying, how can somebody practice devotion? How is it that somebody can practice devotional service for a long period of time and then become attracted again? Or how can someone who's been engaged in being attracted again come back to devotional service?
Like in this life.
Which of those, A or B?
Looks closer to second one.
Second one. Closer to the second one. So, I don't know if there's one answer that fits the circumstance that you just described, because individuals are so individual, they're so different. I mean, in other words, there's so many factors involved in one individual's life and such different factors in another individual's life. Let's consider Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. While they were standing as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, were they remembering their previous life? Not likely. Because they were in the body of trees. But when they were in contact with Krishna, then they once remembered their previous situation. And appreciated Narada's mercy and appreciated Krishna's mercy. Now that's not a yoga principle remembrance, but it's just circumstance. There may be in someone's life that didn't complete yoga practice, there may have been, for example, some heinous activity that they did something very bad. And that blemish, that big mistake, prevented them from going further in their, on the path of back to Godhead. So they took birth again. And something was, you know, they're paying their dues for that big mistake. Covered with forgetfulness. And having paid their dues, perhaps, then that cloud has been cleared and now comes some remembrance. And so many other circumstances. Some inadvertent association with devotees, or some agata sukriti, unknowingly engaging in some devotional service or something like that. There can be so many factors. So, I don't know if there's a general rule that addresses your question. Why some persons quickly and some persons delayed? What are the factors involved? It's very complex. But one thing can be said for sure, that Krishna has given his promise or given his statement, and therefore it comes to pass, because Krishna's word is truth. So at some point they'll get an opportunity to resume, and their attraction will at some point be there again. But it doesn't guarantee, even that there's attraction, it doesn't guarantee that one's going to take that up. One can be attracted at the same time distracted. I know a lot of devotees that are distracted, although they're attracted. Is that from you? No. Yes? That's not your handwriting. Did you write this? You did. You have very good handwriting. Okay. How can we dedicate our life to Krishna? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if that doesn't work, you can try this. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if that doesn't work, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then you can read Prabhupada's books. Respect your teacher and your mother and your father and the devotees, and then continue chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Prabhupada's teachings, and that Krishna's magic will work, that dedication desire will awaken. Just even that you're asking the question means there's the process is working. Because there are lots of young people your age that don't ask that question. I know some other questions they ask, but not that question. So how did that come about? Through having a very nice mother and father that are encouraging you, and devotees to associate with, and Prabhupada's nice teachings, and the Hare Krishna mantra. Oops, and prasadam too. Is that all right? Okay. Very nice handwriting. Whoa. Barack Obama. He's in India right now. What is your opinion? Is he favorable to our movement? I heard he visited ISKCON during his college days and had prasadam. Well, I know one thing, that in his coat pocket, he keeps a Hanuman deity. He thinks it's like a good luck charm or something. But somehow he has some appreciation for Hanuman. And so Prabhupada advised us to not get involved in politics and, you know, commenting about politics and politicians. And, you know, bottom line is he's a politician. So, favorable? You know, if it's going to get him votes, he's favorable. If he's not going to get him votes, he's not favorable. Now, there was some idea that here's a very broad-minded person who is favorable about, you know, that which can take one to God, a very broad-minded person. Anyway. But one of the first acts when he was elected president, one of the very first things that he did completely broke my hopes for this person to do something, you know, uplifting for the world or his country. One of the first things he did was he enacted legislation, or was like the leader of legislation that passed Congress, that permitted Medicaid, you know, taxpayers in America to pay for third term abortions. Those who are mothers know what that means. It's, you know, the first 3 months and the second 3 months and the last 3 months. Third term abortions. So symptoms of life are being exhibited within the womb, and taxpayers' money can pay for killing that child. Is he favorable to the Hare Krishna movement? I don't know what inspired him like that, but, you know, somebody that's... Yuck. That's our president. Question, does devotional service guarantee that one would take human birth, underlined, life after life? The answer is no. Because in your next life, you get an opportunity, and if you do a little devotional service your next life, then your next life. A little devotional service, then the next life. But if you don't take up that opportunity, then no. So at least do a little devotional service. And help other people to do a little devotional service. And it has four lines on it too. Gyani's main business is Sankhya process. But still, why they give some portion of time for meditation on impersonal Brahman, Brahmajyoti? Well, both have the same objective. you know, they have some faculty called intellect and they have some other faculty called mind, and they both are targeted towards the unborn, unmanifest. So one is to support the other. But their target is one thing, merging. Yesterday, you told that we need Krishna's mercy along with our endeavor. Although I have the desire to be sincere, but so many times failed, how can we access that mercy? What we should do to attract Lord's mercy? Well, one should develop the quality of humility by continuing to try to carry out Krishna's instruction, to serve him. And when you, it's really simple. You try to do your service with your very best. Take an instruction that Krishna gives and try to do it. Try to live by it. And you'll find out that on your own you can't, just not within your own power to do so. But continue to try to do that, and it becomes clearer. It's not within my power. And I have all these contaminations in addition. So that the sense of humility will become more prominent. But when that sense of humility becomes prominent and present and more prominent, don't become discouraged. That's very good. From that position, you can then call sincerely for Krishna's mercy. It's in Queen Kunti's prayers. It's a kinchana gochara, where one has no material shelter. As long as, the converse is, as long as one thinks one has shelter in something material, then it's very difficult to feelingly call out to Krishna for his mercy. But when you realize that you don't have that shelter, like calamity is good, or, you know, trying circumstances is good, or you're feeling some, like someone was speaking about, feeling some pain of someone's dealing harshly with you, don't run away from that feeling. Stay with that feeling and see what happens. Not like, you know, be a martyr, but don't just like close your eyes or fight against the material energy. Recognize that this is not a fit place to be. And I can't on my own make my way out of this situation. I need Krishna's mercy. Or as we were discussing, just, you know, fix your mind on the holy name. Or anything that Krishna presents. Try your best to carry out that instruction. You'll become very humbled. And when you're feeling very humble, it's very easy to call for Krishna's mercy. And to support, we have very nice teachings from our great acharyas and from Krishna and Srimad Bhagavatam that illuminate that quality of humility. I was thinking this morning, while chanting, I was thinking about Bhakti Vinod Thakur's expressions of humility in Sharanagati. And his expressions of humility are so humbling. He was in such an exalted position. He wasn't writing like, you know, this is how you all should think. He was writing how he was thinking and feeling with great humility. But he was so elevated. But he was so humble. Like that. That's another way to access or prepare oneself for receiving Krishna's mercy, is become absorbed in the life of one of our great acharyas. take a role model and just like study their life. Just even one of them, but really get absorbed in it. We had a last Vrindavan, no, it was a Mayapur parikrama or yatra. And there was some teenagers that had come with us to the yatra, and one of them was appreciating, wow, we have so many great personalities in our line of disciplic succession. They're just like so awesome. So I, hearing that report from them, I said, I have a suggestion. Why don't you pick one of them and just like focus on their life. Read about them, read their writings, read commentaries on their writings, read their biographies and multiple biographies. Just take one personality. It's one of them that really inspires you. Just like absorb yourself in that personality. See what happens. He said, yeah, let me think about which one. And they picked Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So 7 books and a year and a half later, this devotee is just like a, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur fan. You know, press her button and she can tell you all about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life and so many wonderful things that he's written in his songs and his, you know, how he engaged in his preaching. And he was such a powerful acharya. Huge. Giant. But so humble. So humble, it's like, it's embarrassing how humble. But that's part of his purity. And it's part of his greatness. There was no material shelter for him. Although he had everything. From a material perspective, he had everything. The enviable position amongst the intellectuals of his time. Or the aristocrats of his time. He was respected by the British government in positions that nobody from India was given. Because of his superlative qualifications. But he was so humble. And so productive. And so great in so many ways. But so humble. So, when you're very humble, it's easy to be eager to receive Krishna's mercy. So, absorb yourself in the lives or the character of such persons who are recipients of Krishna's mercy, and that's what will happen to you. You said we should do our sadhana for purification. But in bhakti yoga, we should do everything for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. How can we relate this message and in what mood we should do our sadhana practices? Well, I got as far as the quality of goodness, but after, so ignorance, passion, goodness, after goodness, Kapila Dev describes devotional service in transcendence. And devotional service in transcendence, he characterizes as the water and the Ganges flowing downstream in rainy season. It's effortless. When there's Krishna Katha, you don't have to bring the mind to Krishna. It runs to Krishna. Flows. You can't check the mind. It goes to Krishna, like the Ganges flowing downstream during rainy season. Rushes quickly. So that's spontaneous. So we're not on the spontaneous platform. We're striving for devotional service that's in this quality of goodness where we want to become purified. But there's not a contradiction between wanting to become purified and wanting to please Guru and Krishna, because you can just like exchange one for the other. If you act for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, you're getting purified. And if you're genuinely acting to become purified, Guru and Krishna will be pleased. Ultimately, that purification is their pleasure comes first. Because the contamination is the other way around. My pleasure comes first. And oh, by the way, there's Guru and Krishna. So we're going to adjourn and go see the deities and join the kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Haribol.